Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to the Giants Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco Giants Insider, Alex Pavlovich.
All right, we are back. I let Ahmed come back
for a
second week. This one's a little bit different. We're going to have a guest, Chris Stratton. I talked to him at the end of the year. A really good year for Chris, and somebody who I know Ahmed liked because of the advanced metrics, a lot of professor stuff with him. So that one's coming up in a little bit, and then we'll talk about him. But did want to get to some of the news this week. As we said last week, we're going to do more reaction to what's happening, and kind of a not a surprising stretch for the Giants, but a somewhat busy stretch. Johnny Cueto on Saturday night officially opted. Well, he didn't have to opt in. He just didn't opt out. So four more years, $84 million left for Johnny, which takes him right up against the tax again. But look, they're happy to have him back. And then Monday, they officially announced Madison Bumgarner, $12 million, which was a no-brainer. Matt Moore, $9 million option, which we knew
more
about.
More of a brainer, but we knew about that.
A little more of an interesting discussion with Moore. And then Pablo Sandoval, $500,000, the league minimum. That's the one I think people kind of locked onto on Monday after that was announced. But, I mean, that's kind of... You know, it's a free player. It's a guy in the 40-man roster. They'll bring him in. It doesn't sound like they want him to be the starting third baseman. And if it doesn't work, you let him go in spring training.
Well, that was the news that I got from you, basically, is that they're looking for third base, center field, bullpen. And bringing back Pablo changes none of that.
Yeah.
It's not like they're fooling themselves into thinking that he can carry the load. And I think Brian Sabin even said they're looking for him.
Also, Giancarlo Stanton does not play center field, third base,
you know what?
Or the bullpen. Neither does J.D. Martinez.
I thought that, too. And what did I have at 20%?
20%? I was at 7.
Yeah,
I'm dropping to a 6.
I'm dropping my 20% way down. Yeah, because you're right. And the home run thing, they're not going to get trapped into saying that they have to get a home run guy too, so that's they'd like to, but they don't. But I think of all the you know 1 year options, Matt Moore was the one that I think took the most thought. But we knew that at the end of the year when Bobby Evans basically said a couple times they were going to pick up that option. I mean, no brainers. Madison Bumgarner. I think you tweeted 2014. That option was picked.
You know what's so funny about that? I tweeted that option picked up in October of 2014. I actually got a text from somebody who works at a pretty big media company who wanted to check and make sure that actually wasn't picked up in 2014. I said no, it was a joke. It was just
they didn't know
after what he
humor.
Did. He'll be here forever.
Yeah.
But yeah, that officially was picked up this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean that's. You know, and what were those rumblings when he injured himself in Colorado? Like, how does that affect his future with the Giants?
I mean, remember the couple articles people wrote nationally about will they pick up his option? I'm like, they'll pay him $12 million to hit.
Yeah.
Like, they're in to sell jerseys.
If he can never throw again.
Yeah, if he can never throw again, he'll be back.
Yeah.
But yeah, we should talk about the other thing that happened Monday. Brian Sabin was, look, I should say about Stanton, I think that is a decision that's made at the ownership level, and that is one that if you get to a point, as we talked last week, where you look at the money and go, it's $195 million that we have to pick up, or $180 or $200 or whatever, I think that probably changes your initial offseason math, and that's a separate conversation than where you sit in a boardroom and map out everything you want to do for the offseason. That's one where you go, look, we have a chance to do something completely different than what we had done. But as they start November, as they sit here and start the offseason, Brian Sabin made it very clear. He said, we've gone over everything. We've gone over what we can do trade-wise and free agent-wise and internally, and we've really focused on three areas, and there's center field defense, which we knew, third base, which we kind of knew, but he was very strong about that this week, which surprised me a little bit because that is one spot where they have Arroyo and they have Ryder Jones didn't have a good rookie year, but they have some guys internally. And it's not a huge free agent market for third baseman. I think Todd Frazier is probably the top guy there, and maybe a fit in this lineup, but probably too expensive. And then the bullpen, I think we did know that they want to get a left-handed veteran reliever. That's probably what they're talking about here.
You asked me about that, too. And they, you know, they try to talk up Okert and Osich, but they just haven't performed consistently enough.
Yeah, they just need the Bruce Bochy needs that guy in the seventh inning who he can bring in to get a lefty. And I think Ty Block's going to be pretty good if he's in that role. Will Smith, yeah. You know, watching him throw at the end of the year, I really do think he's going to be back pretty quick. But it's like with last year with left field. Yeah, I mean, you go into it saying, we have these guys, we think it could work, and then pretty quickly you realize, like, hey, you should probably know it's going to work. Right. So I think that's probably why they go out and get a lefty reliever.
And maybe those ones where you're hoping and wishing, like they did with left field, are that's the backup plan, right? Yeah. You know, that's like if everything goes wrong or if someone gets hurt. I do wonder, and you mentioned it off the top, Johnny Cueto. And when that news came out, you reported it. I retweeted you and said, this is good news, you know. I got some responses back that said, is it good news?
Yeah, it's coming off a lot of that too.
Bad year. That doesn't sound like good news to me. A lot of money for a guy who's, what, going to be 32 next year for four more years. I do think it's good news because you need elite players on your team. And no, he was not elite last year, but he has been before. And those guys just don't grow on trees. You just can't get those guys. Getting them for $80 million, yeah, it's a lot of money, but in a sport that's making billions of dollars where payroll is skyrocketing, you can pay it if he's going to be a number one or a number two guy, which I think they still think he can be. I do wonder how that immediately, because I think they already knew he was going to pick that up, but how did that change what they can do now? If he had not accepted that, you know, $21 million this year, what does that change that they could do this offseason?
It, you know, numbers wise, and I've gone through this week, and there will be a story on our website by the time this podcast posts about where they are against the tax. When you throw Cueto in, you throw Bumgarner in, you throw Matt Moore and Sandoval, and then kind of fill out the roster from there, even with minimum players, which you have to do. And people don't realize that CBT number also includes about $14 million in benefits and other stuff that goes into that. So that's why people look and say, hey, the Giants were at, what, $192 million. How are they paying the tax? Well, they're well above because of other stuff that gets added in. But they're right now, they're, you know, here in the beginning of November, they're at around $187 million, and it's $197 million. So you can kind of go from there. And if you're thinking like huge offseason, short of them shedding some salary, getting rid of a Pence or a Span or finding some way to do that, I mean, you're going to have a backup catcher. If it's Hundley, that takes a chunk of that. If there's a left-handed reliever, that pretty much takes the rest of that wiggle room up into the tax, which is what the Cueto thing did. And I agree with you. You need those elite players, and their only chance at competing is for Bumgarner and Cueto and Samardzija and Moore, these guys, to be very good. But it did take them right up against the tax again because it is $21 million, mm-hmm. and they don't have a lot of wiggle room. And if they are going to go out and get somebody big, a big piece, whether it's an outfielder or a third baseman, they're going to have to go over 197, which means they're paying the tax for the fourth year in a row. And I think fans will say do it, but there are people in the front office who want to reset that number.
Especially if you feel like it won't matter, right? Okay, we go over the luxury tax. We're paying, you know, four times or whatever it is. I mean, the repeat offenders get penalized
50% on every dollar you spend.
More and more each
time.
Which
is why they didn't have J.D. Martinez in spring training last year, because they didn't want it. It would have been a huge tax on what they're going to have to pay him to bring him in.
Yeah, so on top of the salary that you're already paying him. And I think that's the number one thing when you, because you're going to hear it a lot. You know, the Giants are making boatloads of money. They got the stadium. All that stuff is true. But the fact remains that, you know, no matter how much money you have, if you feel like if you spent $50 more million on salary and including what you get taxed on that salary, and it won't make a difference between making you a playoff team or not, you're not going to do it. You know what I mean? And so it's like, no matter how much money you have, you're not just going to take $50 million or $20 million and flush it down the toilet just to say you did something if you don't truly believe it's going to be the move that catapults you into playoff contention, which, you know, I think a lot of people agree. They're not one player away right now. You have to get a bounce back from the lineup. If they're league average in that respect and the starters do what we think they can do, they can compete for, I think, a wild card spot. But yeah, you spend $50 million and you got nothing to show for it. No one's going to want to do that no matter how much money you have.
Yeah, and it's, you know, ultimately everybody has a budget, even if you disagree with it. There's one more thing that came out this week. It's not really news, but just listening. We had a 45-minute conference call with the new coaches and the executives.
45? 45. Is that normal? That's yeah,
it's about, you know, start of the offseason. That's where we ask him a bunch of questions. Even little things like, ask, how's Christian Arroyo doing? He is hurt again.
Yeah. So, that's a huge
Jarrett Parker's hurt again. So it's they just can't catch a break with these kids who they're trying to fold in. So that's kind of the stuff we talk about. But we did get introduced to Kurt Young and Alonzo Powell. And the thing that stood out to me, and again, I'll pipe this. You can go to our website, read a story I wrote about this on Monday. But Alonzo Powell, when he was talking, and Bruce Bochy, when he talked about Alonzo and the Astros, they didn't mention home runs. They mentioned keeping the line moving and taking advantage of the players you have. And one thing Bruce Bochy said that stood out to him was the lack of strikeouts. And people don't realize this, but the Astros were last in the majors in strikeouts this year. So that is something I think going forward is people think, hey, they brought in an Astros guy. They want to embrace the launch angle and exit velocity. And we've talked about this. But I think also you have to pay attention a lot to the fact that I think the Giants were somewhere around 20th in the league in strikeouts, which is – it's fine, but I mean, given the players they have and the fact that they're contact players and it's a lineup that doesn't hit homers, they want to be above that. So I think that is going to be one of the focus points for Alonzo. Trying to get these guys to be more of a keep the line moving offense than they were last year.
And they've had success with that in the past. I mean, that really, you just put the ball in play, especially in October. You make the other team make the play, and sometimes they don't, and that is the difference in the game, and we've seen it time and time again. And yeah, I think that would be that's crucial for this Giants team. Cut down on the strikeouts, put the ball in play. Because you're right, as much as we talk about how everyone's fallen in love with the long ball and that can change a game unlike anything else, three-run home run, the game's completely different from that point forward. If you don't have the guys that can do it, you shouldn't try to do it. Increase your launch angle. They say, yeah, just hit it in the air. If you can't hit it with the exit velo necessary or if the ballpark doesn't really help you out in that respect, then it's an out. It's a long out, and you shouldn't do it then. You actually should hit a line drive or keep it on the ground if that's your two alternatives. So, yeah, to say that they need to just start trying to hit home runs with the guys they have, and that was good to hear that the team is realistic.
Yeah.
As much as the fans maybe don't want that to be true, it is true, right? You have what you have. A lot of the guys are going to be back from last year. You try to make do with what you have. And like I just said last segment, if you can get a bump up in production, not an Astros level offense, but league average, right? If you can get closer to league average, then you got a chance, because then you got Bum and Cueto and Samardzija and Moore and maybe Stratton and Block, and then you got a chance to compete. And I think that's what the Giants need to do. No fan should fool themselves into thinking this team needs to be or is going to be a top offense in the National League. It's just not going to happen. But I think they can win without that.
They're built on pitching. They're still built on pitching, which is why today's guest is so important to them. Somebody they discovered, one of the few bright spots of a terrible, terrible, terrible season.
Yep.
And came on pretty late. Chris Stratton. Here's the interview. I talked to him the last weekend of the season. So he's somewhere in Mississippi right now enjoying life with his little kid and his wife, who, credit to them, they traveled around a lot with him and watched him break through. Here's Chris Stratton. Chris Stratton, I'm going to admit you surprised me a little bit this year, and not out of a talent issue or anything, but just that, you know, not many guys took advantage of the opportunity as much as you did. Is that something you look back on as the year is over and just you can be really happy about the fact that they threw you out there and you showed them something?
Oh, for sure. I think coming out, like I've said before, I think coming out of the pen really kind of helped get the nerves out and, you know, kind of get my feet wet in that aspect. But just coming in and trying to do my best to show them that I can compete up here and I can help this team win. I think it's been huge, and hopefully, you know, in spring training, I hope we show the same thing.
How did you deal with some of the delays you had? I mean, I think the first time you had 20 minutes notice. You had when Estes gave a 9-minute speech. You had the Willie Mack night. You had the Lightning night. How did you? You're a young pitcher still. How did you deal with all that?
More times than not, it just kind of seems like something did happen this year, but. Talking to Bum at some point, he said, you know, if they tell me today, you know, they ask me today, hey, we need you to pitch, he said, I think that I will be ready to go out there and compete and, you know, give them the best chance I got. And that kind of was just, you know, just kind of reiterated what I already think, that, you know, whether they call my name right now or if they, you know, 20 minutes before, if they, you know, let me know 2 weeks in advance, I still got to prepare the same way and just be ready to go.
Madison has a very structured pre-start workout routine at the days between. I know Matt Cain's had that. Cueto has his bleacher running. As you get kind of
set up here in the majors, what are you doing to make sure you're ready between starts?
Honestly, just kind of talking with some of those guys. Some of those guys have got 8, 9. You know, Kane's got 12 years. So it's, you know, they've kind of been around, and you want to model yourself after those guys because they've been able to do it for a long time. So I know Kane, you know, runs stadiums as well. I was kind of talking to him in Arizona about that. You know, kind of what he did and his routine, and like you said, just kind of looking at those guys and trying to see their example and try to do the same.
You said something interesting about your fastball that Fedorovich told you in the minors to kind of ride it up in the zone a little bit, and Hundley made that an emphasis here. What do you think made that so effective at the big league level?
I hate to talk about spin rate and all that different stuff. Cause,
well, we could talk spin rate.
Yeah, but I just think that I've always been able to spin the ball pretty well, whether it be a breaking ball or get good backspin on it. So just kind of trying to use it up in the zone, I think it's just been effective so far, and they haven't been able to make an adjustment on it. And until they make an adjustment, that's, you know, that's what the game tells you, just to keep going to it until they make an adjustment, and then you'll adjust from there. So, you know, this is what this game's all about. So, overall, just like I said, it's been a little different to be able to pitch like that, but it all makes sense. So,
I do actually want to talk spin rate because it is a big part of what we do now. Did somebody, when you came up here, did somebody actually show you, or was it in the minors, the spin rate, especially on your curveball? I think it's last I checked, it was top 10 in the big leagues.
No, I mean, nobody's told me, you know, that you spin the ball, you know, this percentage, you know, of everybody. It's just, like I've said before, I think, you know, when you long toss when you're younger, you know, I've always been able to get good rotation on the ball. So it makes sense to, you know, to throw it up higher in the zone than it does lower. I think, you know, lower spin rate and gets you more ground balls, and higher spin rate gets you more pop-ups. And I just think where you throw it in the zone has a lot to do with that. So not to say that I don't want to throw the ball down the zone. I just think that at times, to be more effective, I need to throw up.
Were you surprised at all when you saw the spin rate on your curveball at the big league level and just how elite it was? Or was it something that you've always known you've had that pitch?
No, I think it's kind of been one of those that's come and gone. I think in high school I was just fastball, curveball, and, you know, got to college and developed a changeup and a slider. And a slider is what actually got me drafted, I believe. You know, I threw it more times than not to try to get strikeouts and stuff in college. So I always thought that would kind of be one of my pitches that I would be going to, especially if I ever did make it up here. So it's been a little different, you know, trying to pitch with that.
When you look at your offseason, it's going to be a little bit different this time. You've put a lot on tape. You've put a lot on paper in terms of what you can do. How does that change the way you're about to go, the way you can go about your business this offseason to prepare to fight for a job next spring, instead of maybe coming in and knowing you're going to be pitching behind a guy or pitching out of the bullpen?
Honestly, from a preparation standpoint, I think everything's just the same. I think every year this is a game that you always got to prove yourself each year. You know, guys that are going to arbitration, they got to prove themselves, and, you know, each year to elevate themselves. And even guys like Kane and Bumgarner signed the big contracts, they're still trying to prove each year that they're worth the money that they're getting paid, or, you know, worth their time. So I don't think that it really changes anything, honestly. I just got to go in there and do my best and show them what I got. It's all the same.
When I talked to Bruce Bochy, I had him on here, and I asked, what makes you optimistic about 2018? And he pointed at the rotation, and he mentioned you, and he mentioned Bum and Cueto and Samardzija Moore, what Ty Block has done. When you guys as a group look at next year and what this team needs to do, do you kind of look at yourselves as maybe a group that can lead this team back to contention?
Yeah, we got all the pieces. You know, it's kind of been a trying year with a lot of things. That, you know, just pitching was bad at times, and hitting wasn't as good at times. So definitely can't point the finger at anybody. But I think that overall, I think we've got all the pieces to do really well. And our starting rotation has to be one of the best in the big leagues. So excited about it.
When we asked Matt Cain about what he said to the team, he said you told him a fun story. And since he's retiring here, I want to ask, he said you actually chose him as a player you watched growing up. What did you tell Matt when he told you he was retiring?
It was basically something like, I got here and I was signing, and, you know, being from Mississippi, you don't get to see a whole lot of games in San Francisco, but you know who Bumgarner is. And I knew who Cain was, and I knew who Lincecum was at the time in Bum, but they asked me who my favorite player was on the Giants, and I wanted to say Lincecum, but I didn't want to mispronounce his name, so I said Matt Cain. So Matt Cain's my second, you know, he's my second favorite Giant pitcher, but he's been a lot to this organization, and I hate that this is his last, you know, his last go around here, but we need to celebrate him and all he's done for the Giants.
I've watched him this year, and I've been impressed by the way he's, I mean, Crick follows him around. I know you ask him a lot of questions. I've seen him in the bullpen sitting with guys. They show him on the broadcast. What does he do behind the scenes? You know, I think we understand as beat writers why you guys are such big fans of his. But for the fans, what does he do as a leader for this team?
Especially for the young guys, I think he keeps all of us in line and kind of makes sure that we're doing all the stuff professionally that we should be doing. And like we said before, he's just a great guy and a great clubhouse guy. And I'm really going to miss him in that aspect. And, you know, he's, like you said, he's been a lot for this organization, and hope he goes out with a good one today.
You have a young son who's, I think, probably getting old enough to maybe more comfortably travel. Do you have any plans? I know he's followed you around the big leagues and in AAA. Do you have any plans with him and your wife this offseason?
Well, he's been traveling. He's been on more airplanes now, I think, than most yeah. most people do in a lifetime. So I hate it for him, but he's been a trooper, and my wife's done a great job with him and everything. So I don't know if we're going to really do a whole lot, you know, just go back and go to the slow pace Mississippi, and hopefully just enjoy that.
Well, enjoy that slow pace. I know, you know, you went out on a high note, 6 2/3 innings, but really the whole last couple months, I think, as Bruce Bochy said, made a statement, and should feel pretty good about where you stand going into next year.
For sure. I think you can't take away from what Ty Block's done as well. I took him back to the hotel last night, and we're just kind of talking about it. I think we've both kind of put our foot in the door and hopefully be in the conversation for next year.
I think two bright spots in a season that was disappointing for the most part. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, that was Chris. Like I said, just a huge bright spot, I think. Kind of somebody like Ty Block the year before where you go, hey, there haven't been a lot of players who have broken through. You said there were some things in that interview that stood out to you. What stood out?
Three things I really liked. Okay. So first of all, the spin rate. Talking spin rate.
Yes.
I'm a huge spin rate guy, just because I think it's cool to look at. And the data's cool.
Let me give the numbers for a second.
Okay.
Because he was second among all pitchers who threw at least 100 curveballs last year in spin rate. Second to Garrett Richards. So that shows you how tough that curveball is, and shows you when you see the swings and misses that we saw him get against some pretty good lineups. He was 22nd in fastball spin rate, right behind Aroldis Chapman, who obviously throws, you know, 10, 12 miles per hour faster sometimes, but the spin rate is there. And then he was 21st in slider spin rate. So he does have that third pitch, too, if you're looking from that perspective. Kyle Crick, actually number one among guys who threw 100 sliders in spin rate. So they do have two young guys they brought up last year. The spin rate, I know you love it, and it shows that the stuff, it's not always velocity, the stuff plays up a little bit for Chris.
Yeah, and so I think with a lot of people say, oh, spin rate, what does it matter? Just get the guy out, right? Okay, oh, great, he's got a high spin rate. But you do look at the numbers, and the higher the spin rate, the lower the average in Major League Baseball. I mean, it's uniform. The higher that spin rate goes up for the curveball, the lower the batting average is. Against, and so there are direct correlations to high spin rate on the curveball, and it makes sense when you just think about it. And I really enjoyed hearing him talk about the fastball with the spin rate too, because that's not something you necessarily think would matter that much, but the high spin rate, you get that little rise. The ball doesn't drop as much as a low spin rate fastball would. And so it's really interesting hearing him talk about how you utilize that then. You pitch up in the zone. Maybe not something that he was taught all the way through his college or his professional career and through high school, just because you always hear, keep the ball down. But if you have a high fastball spin rate, you should do the opposite.
And he did say Nick Hunley and Fedorovic, they did tell him at points this year, look, keep the ball up because you're getting awkward swings on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so and we saw the 10 strikeout games that he had both in the same month. But the other thing that I really liked in that interview was the story about Matt Cain, where he said that Matt Cain was his favorite because he couldn't pronounce Lincecum. I'm not going to get caught here mispronouncing Lincecum, so I'll just go with Matt Cain. So I thought that was interesting. But the third thing was right at the end of it, where you're talking about he really does seem to be set up to be the number five starter.
I think we have the same thought here. But
number five starter, right? And you just mentioned that to him. You say, yeah, you got a good spot here to be the number five. And he said, you can't take anything for granted. And then he himself brought up Ty Block and said how he showed just as much to him as maybe Chris did to all of us. What a good teammate move that is. You didn't even bring up Ty Block.
No.
He wanted to make sure that he wasn't left out in that discussion of guys who could be the number five. He could be competing with. He wanted to bring up Ty Block there.
That's on me. I was putting all the shine on him. And, yeah, that stood out to me. I thought about that as soon as he said it, and we were talking a little bit after I interviewed him, and he was, again, raving about the year that Ty had. So I think the Giants, they have a lot of holes to fill. They're in a pretty good spot at the back end of that rotation, I think, with Chris and Ty, two guys who are not arbitration eligible yet, which is huge if you can have these guys who can provide these innings and fill holes. And I really think we saw it with Ty, what he does the first and second time through the order and the way he can warm up quickly and get out there and be pretty flexible. He's going to be such an important piece. Maybe give him a little bit of what they had with Yusmeiro Petit a few years ago, somebody who can just fill gaps here and there. And I think that'll be a huge thing for him. So, Chris, a huge rookie year. Appreciate him coming on, and hopefully people enjoyed that. I do want to get to one last thing before we finish up here, and this was something I said last week. Send us questions. We'll talk about anything.
We got questions?
We got some questions. I'm going to pick one because we're a little low on time.
Okay.
This one from Joseph said, "Hey, Alex," and tagged you too. So, hey, Alex and Ahmed.
Nice.
What would a likely return be if they were to shop Samardzija?
Well, there was a while last year where people said you just have to eat the contract. He has no surplus value outside of that contract. I don't think that's true. I think if he was on the market right now, he would blow past what?
What is left on his?
Yeah. I think so. What is it? 3 years, 54 million.
So, especially this market right now. With a lot of flawed pitchers out there.
Yeah. So I think he would be able to do better than that in the years and in the average annual salary. So I think they can get something for him, especially for a team that wants another, a number three, a guy who can eat some innings, just that needs like a Houston team before Verlander, I think was a great fit for Samardzija because it's a guy that they just needed to be able to rely on that has shown you time and time again that he has elite stuff, Alex, and I think you brought it up a lot too. That outfield defense for the Giants, I think, hurt him as much as anyone, where the numbers just didn't match up with the way he looked and maybe some of his peripheral numbers. I think the outfield defense hurt Jeff Samardzija a lot last year.
It killed him, and you look at the FIP and the XFIP and things like that. I don't know where it ended up, but at some point there was a huge difference there, and he was right in the top. Before the All-Star break, I know he was top 5 or 10 in terms of the advanced stuff, but you look at the ERA and the record, obviously. Just the eye test, just from watching, and you just think about the season, and we thought about this in the press box, just got crushed by the defense, just killed.
Did give up the home runs.
He did give up the home run, which is a problem for him.
Right.
It has always been a problem for him. But part of that is he gives up a lot of fly balls, and that hurt him in terms of defense. So if he's somebody I think will be back, and I think he'll be back because of the no-trade clause, which is very firm, and he did a sneaky good job of putting – I think there's 8 teams on it or something. It's a small list, and it's teams in big cities, and it's going to be hard to find a match. And when you talk about what Brian Sabian said the other day, where he said our starting pitching is the bread and butter here, Jeff Samardzija is part of that. They brought him here to throw 200 innings every year, which he does, and I think they feel like they need that. So I would be stunned. I keep saying this. I'll be stunned by things that might happen, but I would be stunned if that is something that is explored.
Yeah, I mean, there's teams that would want them for sure. They still might want the Giants to eat a little bit of that salary, depending on what they're giving up. But your reporting and hearing the Giants talk about it, hang your hat on those starters, hang your hat on a bullpen that might be a little bit more improved, and just try to be elite in run prevention. Something I thought they would be last year. I thought that's what was going to get them a wild card spot.
That was the plan.
Is that you're just elite at run prevention. You just get by on offense. Without Jeff Samardzija, because then you gotta rely on both Stratton and Ty Block or Tyler Beattie or Andrew Suarez. You know what I mean? And then you're starting to get in the hope and pray territory, like with left field last year.
You're opening
again.
Another hole.
Yeah. It seems like they're trying to fill holes. How do you do that if you don't have money to do it? Maybe you do have to make a tough decision and trade from an area of strength, but I would think it's unlikely to see him go before the year.
All right, that is this week. Hopefully next time we chat, we have some players to talk about, maybe some new players. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. But we're getting into the hot stove season. So like I said last time, send your questions. We'll try to get to some of them on the podcast. And subscribe, share the podcast, download. All that helps us. Yep. Leave reviews.
When Alex tweets about it, retweet that.
Retweet. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. All right, thanks, everybody. We'll be back soon.
Got him.
And that's the perfect game. Swing and a miss. The Giants are world champions.
The Giants Insider Podcast on CSNBayArea.com.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.